All right, so buckle up, everyone, because today we are diving deep into game theory.
Ooh, game theory.
Yeah, we're going to try to at least get a little bit of a grasp on this fascinating subject, help you understand the basics of how people make decisions when others are involved.
Yeah, when the decisions involve other people, it gets a little more complicated than just figuring out what you want.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's not just about what you want, because what other people want influences your outcome.
Exactly. And what you do influences their outcome. So
it's all like interconnected.
It's very interconnected. Yeah. And that's what makes it so interesting.
So where do we even begin? Like, what's the, I don't know, the very first thing we need to understand to start to like unlock all of this?
Well, like any good story or play.
Oh, okay.
You need to set the stage, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So before the actors come out, you need the set. You need the props. You need, like, the basic scenario so that everyone knows what's going on.
Okay.
And that's what a game frame does.
A game frame.
In game theory, yeah.
Right.
It tells us who the players are.
Okay.
What choices they have and what the possible outcomes could be.
Okay, so it's like the, kind of like the rules of the game.
Exactly, yeah. It's like the blueprint for the strategic interaction.
Okay, I like that, the blueprint. All right, so.
So let's take a classic example, the game show Split or Steal.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah, so you've got two players, right?
Yeah.
And they each have to decide.
Okay.
Do they split a prize?
Okay.
Or try to steal it all?
Right.
So that's the basic game frame. Two players, each with the choice to split or steal.
Right.
And a handful of possible outcomes.
Okay.
Which depend on who chooses what.
So, like, if they both choose to split, then they both get half.
Exactly.
But if one of them tries to steal?
Well, then it gets interesting.
Oh.
Because if one steals and the other splits, the stealer gets everything.
Ooh, that's brutal.
Yeah, it is. But if they both try to steal,
what happens then?
They both end up with nothing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it really highlights how, like, the choices players make directly determine the outcome.
Right, right. Okay, so that's the game frame. That's like the setup.
That's the setup.
The blueprint.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, but how do we actually, like, figure out what each player should do in that situation?
Right, so to figure that out, we need to consider each player's goals.
Okay.
How much they value different outcomes.
Right, because, like, I might be the kind of person who would rather we both get something.
Exactly.
Than me risking getting nothing.
Yeah, and someone else might be super competitive.
Right.
And only care about getting the most money no matter what.
Okay, so even with the same game, different players might have different ideas of what a good outcome is.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where the concept of utility comes in.
Utility, okay.
So we assign numbers to outcomes.
Okay.
Based on each player's preference ranking, higher numbers mean a more preferred outcome.
Okay.
So for you, splitting might have a higher utility than stealing because you value fairness or cooperation.
Right.
But for someone else who's super competitive, stealing would have a higher utility.
Okay, so it's kind of like we're quantifying their motivations.
Exactly.
Putting a number on them.
Exactly, yeah. And once we have these utility numbers, we can build something called payoff functions.
Payoff functions.
Yeah, which show us how each player's payoff depends on the strategies chosen by all the players.
Okay, this is, I can already see how this can apply to way more than just game shows.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, like negotiating a salary or even deciding who does the dishes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like a whole framework.
Right. Game theory gives us this framework for analyzing any strategic interaction.
I like it.
Yeah, no matter what the context.
Okay, so we've got the game frame, and then we've got these payoff functions, which lay out the possible outcomes.
Right.
But how do players actually figure out what their best move is? Like, how do they actually use all of this information to make a decision?
That's where we start diving into strategies.
Okay.
And one of the most powerful concepts is the idea of a dominant strategy.
A dominant strategy.
Yeah. This is a strategy that gives a player the best payoff.
Okay.
No matter what the other players do.
So it's like a foolproof plan.
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's like if you find a dominant strategy, you don't even have to worry about what the other person's doing.
Okay.
You just know that this is the best thing you can do.
It's like having the ultimate cheat code.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Right. Like, think about a second price auction.
Okay.
So you know the most you're willing to pay for an item, right?
Yeah.
Game theory shows that the best strategy is simply to bid that exact amount, your true value.
Oh.
And the reason is because you're guaranteed to win if your value is the highest, and you won't overpay if it's not.
Okay.
So that's a dominant strategy.
Whoa. Okay, so Knowing that could actually help you win more auctions.
Exactly.
Okay.
But not all games have dominant strategies.
Right.
Sometimes the best choice depends on what you think your opponent will do.
Right, right. It gets a little more fuzzy.
Yeah, it gets more into psychology and trying to read the other person.
Okay.
And that's where we start getting into even more interesting concepts like Nash equilibrium and best responses.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, before we jump into those.
Okay.
There's one more important distinction we need to make,
okay,
which is the difference between static games,
mm-hmm,
like Split or Steel,
mm-hmm,
where players make their decisions simultaneously, and dynamic games.
Okay, dynamic. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so dynamic games are games where the decisions happen over time. Okay, so that's more like a chess match.
Exactly.
Where you have to anticipate your opponent's moves.
Yeah, and how your moves might influence their future moves.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, think of a business trying to decide whether to enter a new market.
Okay.
If there's already a big player in that market, they might threaten to lower prices to drive the new entrant out of business.
Right.
But in a static game, that threat might not be credible because the established company would also lose money.
Right.
By lowering their prices.
Right. They would both be hurting.
Yeah, exactly.
But in a dynamic game, they could actually follow through on that threat.
Exactly, yeah.
Initially.
Yes. Yeah.
To, like, scare off future competitors.
Right. It becomes a question of reputation and long-term strategy.
Right, right.
So that's just a taste of how dynamic games can get really complex and fascinating.
Okay. I'm ready to get into the complexity.
Yeah.
So we've got static versus dynamic games.
Yeah.
We've got dominant strategies. And, like, this idea that players have different preferences and goals.
Exactly.
What else do we need to know?
Well, in the real world, people often don't have all the information.
Right. It's not like those game shows where it's all laid out in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. So next, we've got to consider the role of imperfect information.
Oh, imperfect information. I like it.
Yeah, it's a big one.
All right. Well, let's get into that.
Okay.
After, I guess we'll have to continue this conversation next time.
Yeah, sounds good.
This is already, like, blowing my mind a little bit.
It's a lot to take in, yeah.
But I'm ready for more.
Awesome.
Okay, so before we got sidetracked, we were talking about imperfect information.
Right, yeah.
What's the big deal with, you know, when players don't have the full picture?
Well, imagine playing poker.
Okay.
If you knew exactly what cards your opponent had.
Right.
The game would be pretty boring.
Yeah, you'd know exactly what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
No fun in that.
Yeah, so the thrill comes from the uncertainty, from trying to read their bets, their bluffs,
mm-hmm,
trying to figure out what they're holding.
Okay.
And in game theory, we use something called information sets to represent...
Information sets?
Yeah, think of it like the fog of war.
Oh, okay.
In a video game.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're somewhere on the map.
Right.
But you don't know exactly where your opponents are.
Right, and what they're doing.
Or what moves they've made.
Exactly. It's like a game of strategic hide and seek.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like those blurry patches on the map where anything could be lurking.
Right, right.
And that uncertainty forces players to make decisions based on what they believe is most likely.
Okay.
Even if they don't have all the facts.
So how do we factor that into... You know, into our analysis.
Well, one important concept is subgame perfect equilibrium.
Subgame perfect equilibrium.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
It is.
But essentially, it helps us rule out solutions that rely on empty threats or promises.
Okay.
Things that wouldn't actually make sense if that part of the game were ever reached.
So it's like calling someone's bluff.
That's exactly.
Like if they're threatening to do something that would ultimately hurt them, subgame perfect equilibrium's like, nah, not gonna happen.
Yeah, we're looking for strategies that are rational.
Okay.
At every point in the game.
So even in those, like, foggy information sets.
Even in those foggy information sets where players might not know everything.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got the fog of war.
Mm-hmm.
We've got strategic hide and seek.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's not just about, like, hidden information, right?
Yay.
Sometimes, yeah. Like... the outcomes themselves are uncertain.
That's another fascinating aspect of game theory.
Okay.
It's not always clear what will happen.
Yeah.
Even if everyone knows what everyone else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like investing in the stock market.
Oh.
Probably. You can research companies.
Right.
Analyze trends, but there's always a chance that...
it's a crazy event.
Yeah, like a global pandemic.
Right, exactly. Who could predict that?
Or who knows? Aliens could land.
Okay, so how do we deal with that?
Yeah, so that's where expected utility theory comes in.
Expected utility theory.
It helps us make decisions when we don't know the exact outcome.
Okay.
but we have some idea of the probabilities.
Okay, so it's like calculating the odds.
Exactly, yeah. It's about weighing the potential payoffs of different choices against the likelihood of those payoffs actually happening.
So, like, would you rather have a 50-50 chance of winning $100 or a guaranteed $20?
Yeah, exactly.
That utility theory helps us figure that
out. Exactly. It helps us understand how people make those decisions.
And this is where, I guess, people's different attitudes towards risk come into play.
Absolutely.
Right, because some people love risky bets.
Right. Some people are risk-seeking.
Yeah.
And others are more risk-averse.
Right. They'd rather take the sure thing.
Exactly. And those individual risk preferences actually get baked into the utility calculations.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So someone who's risk-averse might assign a much lower utility to that 50-50 chance of winning $100 than someone who loves to gamble.
So it's not just about, like, the cold, hard calculations.
Yeah.
It's also about how people feel about the different levels of risk.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's about understanding the human element in strategic decision making.
I love that. Okay, so we've gone from basic game frames to hidden information to uncertainty about outcomes.
Yeah.
Now we've got even, like, individual risk preferences.
Right.
What else is there?
Well, remember how we were talking about players sometimes having to guess what their opponents will do?
Right. Fair.
Sometimes the best strategy isn't to choose just one action,
okay,
but to randomly mix things up.
Oh, yeah, those mixed strategies.
Yeah, mixed strategies.
It's like you're keeping your opponent on their toes.
Exactly.
So they never know what's coming next.
It's all about introducing uncertainty.
Okay.
Think of penalty kicks in soccer.
Okay, yeah.
If the kicker always aims for the same corner,
right,
the goalie's going to figure it out.
Right. But if they randomly choose left or right...
Exactly. Then it makes it much harder to defend.
Okay, so how do we find these mixed strategy solutions? Like, how do we even begin to calculate that?
Yeah, so the key is finding a balance
where
each player's mixed strategy makes the other players indifferent to which pure strategy they choose.
Oh.
So kind of like the strategic dance where everyone's constantly adjusting their moves based on what they think the other players will do.
It's a little mind-bendy.
It can be, yeah. But the cool thing is game theory actually guarantees that for every finite game, there is at least one mixed strategy equilibrium.
So even if there's no, like, clear best move, there's still some kind of solution.
There's always a way to find a stable outcome where no one has an incentive to change their strategy.
So even in, like, the most complex games, we can find some kind of harmony.
In a way, yeah. It's like finding that perfect balance point.
Okay.
Where everyone's doing the best they can, given what everyone else is doing.
I like it.
Yeah.
But remember how we talked about common knowledge of rationality?
Right.
Like, in the real world, people aren't always perfectly rational.
That's an important point.
Right.
The assumption of rationality is super powerful in game theory.
Okay.
But we need to remember its limitations. Yeah, so in reality, people are influenced by emotions, biases.
All sorts of things.
All sorts of messy human stuff.
That we can't really quantify.
Yeah, that might not fit neatly into our models.
So it's like we're building these beautiful strategic frameworks, and then real life comes along and throws a wrench in the gears.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean game theory is useless.
Right.
It just means we need to be mindful of its assumptions and use it as more of a guide than a set of ironclad rules.
Okay, so game theory is not a crystal ball.
No, definitely not.
But it can still help us make sense of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, it gives us a way to think about strategic interaction to anticipate potential outcomes and to make more informed decisions.
I like it.
Yeah, and speaking of information... There's actually another layer of complexity we need to unravel.
Oh, no. Another one.
Yeah. So it's not just about the information we have, but also about what we believe and what we know about the game itself and about the other players.
Whoa. Meta much.
Yeah. It's a crucial distinction.
All right. Well, let's dive into that. We'll save that for next time, though, because I think we're...
Yeah. We're about out of time.
Sounds good. All right. So we're back. And we're about to go full-on Matrix here.
Oh, I love the Matrix.
Right, because we're talking about knowledge and belief in game theory.
Yeah, it's a mind-bending concept for sure.
Yeah.
But it's really crucial for understanding how players make decisions in these complex situations.
Yeah, well, how do we, like, even begin to untangle this?
Right, so we start by distinguishing between knowledge and belief. So knowledge is something that you're certain about. It's based on facts.
Okay.
Can't be wrong.
Okay.
Belief, on the other hand, allows for the possibility of being mistaken.
Okay, so like I know that I'm sitting here recording a podcast with you.
Right.
But I believe that this episode will be really helpful for our listeners.
Right, exactly.
But we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, it's a perfect example.
Okay, so in game theory, like how important are those two things?
They're both crucial because sometimes a player might act on a belief even if they don't have the complete knowledge. No. And that can lead to all sorts of interesting outcomes.
All right, so how do we actually like model those things?
Right, we're not drawing thought bubbles.
Okay, good.
We're using something called information partitions.
Information partition.
Think of it like dividing up all the possible states of the world based on what each player knows.
Okay.
So let's say we're playing a simple card game where there's one red card and one black card.
Mm-hmm.
If I know I have the red card, my information partition would have just one state. I have the red card.
Okay.
But if you don't know which card I have,
yeah,
your information partition has two states.
Right.
One where I have the red card and one where I have the black card.
Right. So it's like we each have our own little map of the game.
Exactly.
Based on what we know for sure.
Based on our own knowledge.
Okay, got it.
And then there's this even wilder concept called common knowledge.
Common knowledge, okay.
So this is when something is not only known by everyone, but everyone knows that everyone knows it.
Okay.
And everyone knows that everyone knows that everyone knows it.
Whoa, it's like a recursive loop of knowledge.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, can you give me a real world example?
Yeah, imagine two friends, Alice and Bob, are in a room.
Okay.
And there's a pink elephant standing right in front of them.
Okay.
Alice sees the elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Bob sees the elephant.
Okay.
They both know there's a pink elephant.
Right.
But Alice also knows that Bob knows there's a pink elephant. And Bob knows that Alice knows that he knows.
So it's like, not only is it obvious, but it's obviously obvious.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this common knowledge is crucial for a lot of game theory concepts to actually work.
Okay, so it's like, we all have to be on the same page.
Yeah, there needs to be this shared understanding.
Okay.
And if there isn't, it can lead to, like, miscalculations and misunderstandings.
So common knowledge is, like, the bedrock of the game.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
But sometimes we need to go even further.
Oh.
We need to incorporate beliefs into knowledge.
Oh, okay. So it's getting even more nuanced.
It is. It's getting more complex.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because now we can model situations where players have different levels of confidence about what's actually true.
So we're adding shades of gray to our black and white world of knowledge.
Exactly.
Okay.
So one way to do this is by using a common prior.
Common prior.
Yeah, which is a shared probability distribution over the possible states of the world.
Oh, okay. So it's like we're saying, okay, we might disagree on what's true right now.
Right.
But we agree on how likely different things are to be true.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's kind of like a starting point for our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we both agree that there's a 50% chance it will rain tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
even though you might be hoping for sunshine and I might be hoping for a thunderstorm.
Right, right.
But we agree on that 50%.
Okay.
And then, once we have this common prior, we can use something called Bayesian updating.
Okay.
To revise our beliefs as we get new information.
So if you see dark clouds gathering, you might update your 50% chance of rain to like 70%.
Exactly. Okay. So we're constantly adjusting our mental models.
Okay.
Based on the new information we're getting.
I like it. Okay. So where do sequential equilibrium and perfect Bayesian equilibrium fit into all this?
So these are refinements of subgame perfect equilibrium that take knowledge and belief into account.
Okay.
They basically help us narrow down the possible outcomes of a game by eliminating solutions that rely on unreasonable beliefs or behaviors.
So we're like getting rid of the nonsensical stuff.
Exactly. We're looking for solutions that make sense.
Okay.
Given what players know and believe.
So it's like making sure there are no plot holes in our strategic story.
Exactly.
Okay.
So sequential equilibrium makes sure that players are making rational decisions at every point in the game.
Okay.
Even in those parts that might never actually be reached.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then perfect Bayesian equilibrium goes a step further.
Okay.
By making sure that those beliefs are updated in a rational way.
Right.
Using Bayes' rule.
So it's like we're saying, okay, you can have beliefs.
Right.
But they have to be logically consistent with the information you're getting.
Exactly. We're holding players accountable, not just for their actions, but for the reasons behind those actions as well.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have, yeah.
From basic game frames to hidden information, uncertainty, mixed strategies.
It's a lot.
Now we're dealing with knowledge, belief, all this like really complex stuff.
But hopefully it's starting to make a little bit of sense.
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like this is helping me like level up my strategic thinking.
I hope so. That's the goal.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think the key takeaway is that game theory gives us this really powerful framework for understanding how people make decisions in all sorts of situations. And while it might not be a crystal ball,
right,
it can definitely help us make sense of the world around us.
I like it.
Yeah.
So to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into game theory.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed it.
And keep on strategizing.
See you next time.